Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Uber is trying to take out Lyft once and for all, and Snapchat blows up. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech. Won't you stay,
babe? I don't know. Is this new De La?
It's a new De La, man. Different vibe. I know we typically start the show with some up. This is on some mellow. Some just groovy. Put you in that right mentality, you know what I'm saying? For you going to your weekend.
Is this record? Wait. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm Joe Braswell. That is Akili Shine. How you doing?
Good, man. Doing very well.
Good. So this is De La. Like, this is from my generation. These guys are 2 years older than me. I know the record's been coming. Is the record out?
Yeah, it's out.
How is it?
It's great. It's awesome. I think it's exceptional, actually.
Is it? Can I find it anywhere other than trying to get it from them? Because I know they keep emailing me saying, like, get a record from us.
It's on Apple Music.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, shit. Yeah. Once again, our weekly segment of Akili telling me what music is hot. That's 2 weeks old or older.
Yeah, man. But, you know, I mean, like you said, it's golden era hip hop. De La Soul, man. It's the fact that they're still, you know, creating music and records in 2016 and it's relevant and it's soulful and it's meaningful. I think that's amazing to have that type of longevity, you know?
Yeah.
You don't find that too often. And so I like having them in the mix still and the diversity of what I listen to.
Just on this, is De La is, you know, they've been super, super active on social, you know, via social media and email and digitally, and really, really sort of, you know, they're 100% Gen X people. They're part of the giant Gen X movement. Mm-hmm. I mean, 3 Feet High and Rising was 89, mm-hmm. and it, like, you know, really sort of revolutionized the way people thought about hip hop in general.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 4 to 5 years, these guys have really sort of got into the digital age and really have gotten to the underground and more so the digital underground, excuse the pun, and done it as well as anybody. I think that's really innovative for a bunch of old guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've been in the business. They've seen the highs and lows, the peaks and valleys, the transmutation of the business. So I think, and that's what's exceptional to me, that they're able to still use the technology and use where we are socially to still be relevant, and right. I think that's phenomenal.
How long's the record been out? Do you know?
I think it came out this week.
Okay, yeah, that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
Shit. Okay, so I'm gonna check it out. And so do you know how it's doing? I'm very interested to see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really look to see how records are doing. I just listen to records. If I like them, I like them. If I don't, I don't.
I mean, of course, it's been pardon the pun, but they've been sort of enveloped by the wave that is Frank Ocean, you know, also, like, everything's all Frank Ocean all the time. Have you heard that record?
Yeah.
And what do you think?
I give it a thumbs up.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm definitely a Frank fan. I think he's very talented. But,
right. Yeah. Okay. Well, we as always, digress into some current stuff in music. I've given my obligatory one listen, and I think it's great. It just feels like it requires a much deeper dive and actually some also some sort of like mood oriented,
definitely,
you know, stuff, because sometimes you're not in a mind, like, doing something. I'm like, yeah. Do I want to hear this right now?
Nah, it's definitely a setting, a time and place for the record.
Right. So I think that's kind of my issue with a lot of music. I feel like that I need to be in the right time and place to really be able to take it in.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes I don't find myself in that place. And I wonder if that's, I don't know. I wonder if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, like in terms of like, I don't know what music's supposed to do, but sometimes you put music on and then it transports you to that place. Other times you have to be in the place to receive it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And so, like, I wonder, in this day and age, what in the age of non-pop music and everything has to be a pop record, I wonder if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is an open question. Anyway, let's get into some of these stories get out of here. So we've been talking a lot about bots and things and Twitter bots and other stuff and AI. Well, there's an AI that will help you sort of write some emails, not entirely like write emails like from scratch, like write emails for you, but there's some new AI that's come out that will help you. It's like Boomerang. It's a company called Boomerang, has a plugin that will help you craft these emails. It's called Respondable. Is this correct?
Yes, yeah, correct. Essentially, it's using, you know, the AI technology to be able to go through your emails and analyze them and see what information is important or what the relational quality is, and then it will draft up an email based on all those factors. And also, it's tracking your email and your conversation with people and just getting, you know, various bits of information. And right now, there isn't development. It's not full force where it's able to, like, communicate, you know, as a human. It's doing that, I believe, at a sixth grade level, reading level and writing level. So I think it's just a great case study for what could happen in terms of, you know, efficiency with, you know, business and various other means of using it. But I'm kind of on the fence with this in terms of the dependency of having a robot now write for you, yeah, concept for you. But I get it in terms of it being time efficient, because you might have 50 emails come in within a span of 3 hours and you can't really address all of them. But if you have a bot that can do that, hey, then it improves productivity. You're still able to communicate and get things flowing. So I get the usefulness of it, but I don't like the dependency of it. So I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know what you're talking about. You're the cat who's trying to be in your autonomous car with the VR headset. You can have your emails being written to you while you got your VR goggles on, being driven around in your car. But yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. I just feel like we're getting further and further away. I don't know. I just, like, for a guy who does a technology show, I seem to be the guy who is, you know, kind of get off my lawn about a lot of this stuff, because I feel like we're just getting further and further away from the human piece of all of this.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's bad enough. Look, we've already all but replaced the art of writing handwriting letters and handwriting stuff.
Yeah, they don't even teach it in schools.
Yeah, so it's either keyboard or texting or whatever it is. So then if that's a form of expression, you can still write and express via writing. But writing is now going away because, you know, as our next story we'll talk about, that's being replaced by video, by being able to, like, do, you know, either if it's supposed to write something, you can just send videos of stuff. Right. So, you know, if we can't express ourselves through writing, which is something, just something really tactile about that.
I don't think that's the argument, whether or not we can express it. Because, like, someone will say, well, you know, I have an assistant that addresses my emails.
Yeah, okay.
So what's the difference?
That's it.
Instead of paying for an assistant to do that, now I have a bot that does it, and I save money.
Yeah, but it's also kind of like, it's the same thing of having the, I used to lose that personal touch. I just feel like it's the same thing.
I agree with that.
You know, it's the auto, I don't know, whatever. It's the auto reply on your, you know. I'm not. I don't know. It's just something about you want to be able to say that I'm a person. I'm actually here. I guess what's analogous to me is like calling a call center and getting the automated person rather than getting a real person. Like, you want that real person. And when it's like, hello, press 1, 2, blah blah blah, you're like, ah, hell. It's the same thing with this email thing and that for me. I want to know that I'm talking to somebody.
Of course.
You know, but you know, I guess this is. Look, there's nothing wrong with coming up with tools. This is what technology, you know, by definition is. It comes up with tools to help us, you know, improve our way of life or improve things.
Yeah, that's the thing with technology, to piggyback on that. It helps to solve a problem, but it also creates a problem. And so it might be solving the problem of efficiency, but it's creating a problem of connectivity, of human connectivity. So it's like that's the flip side of the coin that we always discuss, the yin and the yang of technologies, that, you know, it might innovate in the area, but it also might diminish another area. Right. And that's why you have to be cautious with what technologies that we use and we bring to the forefront of our society, because they could be destructive.
Right. So I agree. So moving on to that point, Facebook is now sort of like, if we talk about Facebook Live a lot, they have a new, they've replaced their button, new button placement on Facebook Live. They put it in the top left-hand corner, kind of where the status update used to be. And so instead of, like, you know, status, you know, putting your status, you can just click on the Facebook Live button and just start talking to folks. Yeah. I think that this is, I think this is great for, I think it's a great sort of interesting innovation, but I'm really more interested about what this, what this means, what Facebook thinks the importance of people being able to share and stream live video is. Is this about keeping people in the ecosystem? If they're on their live, they're on there longer, doing more stuff. Is this about, I mean, what is the importance of this for Facebook?
I think it's definitely that, keeping them in the ecosystem, the more time that they're on the platform, and also just, you know, them ramping up the video component of Facebook and being a platform that has UGC content that is in various forms. And so being that we talk about Periscope and Meerkat and all these other companies that have developed live streaming.
I know exactly, right?
Live streaming, like Facebook wants to be, you know, right, and they want to be the leading people, just like they are attempting to be in every other aspect of the platform. And so I think that is the thing, you know, like make it more user friendly and make it more presentable, so that when you see it, it's like, okay, let me try this out, and like maybe that'll create another way of communicating, another way of interacting. And I see it working. I see people using it more and more. When I'm on Facebook, I see more live streams happening. I think it might change the way we engage and interact when we're out and about. But I think it's smart. I think it's good, and I think it's going to improve. It's going to improve their money reserve. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so. It's kind of back to what I was saying earlier. It's like, you know, constant status updates, you know, from Facebook gave birth to Twitter, you know, like sort of like, and then which you're constantly tweeting out, you know, what mm-hmm. you're doing at that moment or whatever it is, mm-hmm. which gave birth to, you know, the Periscopes and the Meerkats, mm-hmm. which gave birth to the Snapchat and now this live. And I think this is kind of where we're going. I mean, yeah. like, you know, Instagram's there with the video, Snapchat's obviously, you know, lives there. Yeah. And now Facebook is there. I mean, do you think this is going to just sort of replace will people stop just like giving their status updates?
I don't think it'll replace. I think it's just something. It's another tool in a toolbox that people will have to be able to express themselves, and it could be used maybe more collaboratively in the future. It might be an opportunity for actual networks or other platforms to use this type of feature to be able to market their products. Like, I mean, the usability of it, I think, is endless. The potential of it is endless, and so I think making it more prominent, and that's what they're doing by putting it in that space where the status update is, making it more prominent, getting it on people's minds, getting it more of a conversation piece. And I think that is for a reason, maybe that they have not spelled out, but I mean, from my take, it's just more conversation, more interactivity. And I think we'll figure out the rest later. I think that's what they're doing.
Okay, so. Well, Facebook yeah. is. Knows what they're doing, clearly. I think other people who know what they're doing is Snapchat. And Snapchat is doing something where they're bringing live high school scores, live high school football game scores.
Right.
You know, and some people are like, oh, who cares? I mean, yeah. they linked up with this company called ScoreStream. And, like, what people may or may not realize is high school football in, maybe not in California, but in other parts of the country, is a huge, huge, huge deal.
Of course.
Huge, massive deal.
Centerpiece of some towns.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like, it's big as college football in some towns. And so, yeah. Friday Night Lights and everything else, especially in Texas and Georgia and some of the places in the South. So, yeah. I mean, you know, I think this is kind of cool, especially when you think about the users, the Snapchat yeah. users. What do you think of this?
I mean, I think it's cool in a sense that it's another opportunity for there to be UGC content, mm-hmm. user-generated content. But I don't know. It's I like the fact that, you know, the pyramid is kind of being inverted, where at the top of the pyramid before you had the producers, and then at the bottom of the pyramid you had the audience. Now it's like it's being flipped over. Now everyone that was at the bottom is now at the top. The audience is now participating and able to create and able to, you know, be a part of the conversation versus just receiving the information. So I think this is a good way for high school kids and just, you know, the millennial generation to be able to promote, you know, where they are, because that's where they are. They're at games, they're at, you know, sporting events, activities that happen after school, and this is a good thing for sports in general, just to get it on people's radars a little bit more. So
yeah. I mean I agree. What do you think about the Gatorade part of it?
I think that's a great brand partnership, you know, being that Gatorade is connecting the athletes, and, you know, it's a enhancing drink for athletes, and I think it's just a good brand marriage in that sense, like for them to sponsor it and get their product in front of, you know, that specific audience. I think it's a great move for them in that sense. I don't know if this is going to be like ubiquitous in the sense that a lot of people are going to use it. Like, yeah. I can't see like being on Snapchat and seeing this plugin or whatever, this option a lot of times. Like, okay, great, high school game score, cool, great. Okay, it changed. A field goal was made and someone changed it. All right, great, awesome.
But this is the key. It's not just about, like, you know, this is how you get them, right? This is not about like a mass megaphone. This is about micro niching. So yeah. If they can get to all these high school kids and become this the thing that all these sort of high school, if they can own the high school football right. scores world, and then they own the high school basketball scores world, and then maybe they'll turn around and own the Dungeons and Dragons world. If you own all these little sub niches, next thing you know, you have everything.
But will people really care about high school scores? Will they really care that much? Well, I have to Snapchat this? Yeah. I have to Snapchat the score? That's what I don't see. That's hard for me to grasp.
I see. You're right. It's hard to underestimate the power of the micro niche.
Right.
You know. So.
But speaking of football,
yeah.
We have a great company that helps to sponsor our show, DraftKings.
DraftKings.
And if football is your passion, and you know all the players and all the teams, their strengths and their weaknesses, now you can put that knowledge to the test and play for your shot at the $1 million top prize at DraftKings.com. It's just part of the $5 million in total prizes that they're doling out in this week one contest. DraftKings.com is the destination for 1 week fantasy football. 1 week fantasy means no season-long commitments. You can play whenever you want and with the players that you want. You just pick the contest, you draft your players, and you follow your team live. Renew old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league to prove that you're the superior GM. Or join an existing league and go head-to-head with friends, coworkers, and fantasy players from all across the country. So, hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your players, and you can seriously cash in week one. Use code GEEK and play for free with your first deposit. That's code GEEK, G-E-E-K, to play free for your share of the $5 million in total prizes in this week one contest. And that's only at DraftKings.com, DraftKings.com.
That's right. And also, I want to talk to our friends over at General Assembly. General Assembly is a fantastic school we talk about all the time. If you're looking for a career in tech, business data, marketing, trying to get a promotion or a raise, you want to excel in your career, you need 21st century skills. We talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. General Assembly is the largest, most respected school worldwide for people seeking to grow their talents and master the marketplace. Whether it's learning remotely online or they're in person at one of their wonderful campuses, you can be one of the 350,000 people who already gotten training they need to prepare their careers in tech or business.
There it is.
More than 2,500 companies worldwide hired GA's graduates, with 99% of those people who participate in GA's career services landed a new job in the field within 6 months of starting their job search, which is, again, incredible. We talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
You take control of your talent career now. Find out more at ga.co/geek. That's ga.co/geek. Enter promo code GEEK. Save on your first class, workshop, or event. That's ga.co/geek. Code word GEEK. General Assembly. Like, go get that education, get those skills, and DraftKings as well.
Get your money up.
Fantasy football starting, so it's time. It's time for all that. Back to Snapchat really quick. Snapchat is on pace to reach 217 million users by the end of 2017. That's a lot, considering they're at 58 million users like at the end of 2016.
Right.
The fact they're going to jump from 59 million users from the end of 2016 to 217 million users, that's a pretty giant jump.
Yeah.
What do you think of this? I mean, they're far from the billions, the B at Facebook, but they're still up there.
I mean, they're definitely up there. It's definitely a slice of the market, and it's especially targeted for. I think 90% of the users are between the ages of like 12 and 21 or 25, I believe. And so, I mean, they have that niche. They have those ears and eyeballs. They have those participants. And I think, obviously, there's going to be more and more that are going to sign up. And I think that's huge in terms of what it can do with, you know, the Discover attributes that it has with brands and different networks, and how it can offer brands the opportunity to get their products in front of that audience. But I'm interested to see, and maybe this is a question I have for you, I'm interested to see how they're going to combat the Instagrams or the Facebooks of the world when they are still innovating and developing and becoming more competitive, and trying to target the millennial generation. Like, I think that it might be not as easy as some might say for Snapchat to really dominate with that grouping. What do you think?
I think it really depends on what the growth. It's like, it's really interesting. It's kind of like what the growth of Snapchat is versus how we start to what social means for us in the future. In other words, so the Facebook, the old school Facebook, I'm going to go online and create my profile and do this thing, the Friendster / Facebook original thing, where Facebook has this wonderful baseline of users, which grown to 1 billion people, and now off that 1 billion, Facebook is innovating and doing live and those other stuff. Well, I think Snapchat is sort of saying that that's the old model. This is the way people are going to interact and share now, and we're starting at this base. We're starting up here and going to grow into where people are going. If you see Facebook right now, arguably scrambling to try to get to what they're doing. Now, you can make the argument that Facebook is going to, you know, envelop Snapchat and have Snapchat go the way of Meerkat and Periscope, but I don't know about this. I feel it's hard to say. Like, kind of was saying earlier about the status updates being replaced by video, and, you know, and what Instagram's doing, and I don't know. It's hard to say what people, how, you know, people will be sharing and interacting in 2017 and 2018, you know, versus how they have in the past.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. My only quarrel with that is I think that because of Facebook's size, because,
yeah,
and I mean size in terms of the revenue,
sure,
I think they have more of a propensity to innovate and to experiment and,
yeah,
to drown out their competition. Like, I think they, I mean, I don't know statistically, you know, when they added that functionality to Instagram, if that had any effect to Snapchat, or if it's even like creeping up on them, or if it surpassed them. But I feel that I feel like they're more positioned to be able to cut them at the ankles, you know, cut them at,
yeah,
the knees.
Well,
and so, because it's so, like, we talk about with Apple versus like Samsung, like, because Apple has so much money, they can have the marketing budget to be able to promote new things and do all that stuff that,
yeah,
maybe another company cannot. And I see the same thing with Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like, to me, it's not so much the cutting at the knees, it's more of the sledgehammer. Like, you know, Snapchat comes with a little hammer,
yeah,
and Facebook just comes with an anvil rack.
Yeah.
You know, like, they, you know, it's a whole thing. Yeah, so it's like, if whatever the innovation Snapchat comes in that's like making a little noise, Facebook goes, oh, okay, cool, blah.
Right.
You know, so that being said, there is something, you do need quality. Like, you know, using another analogy, Netflix. You know, Netflix says, we're going to get in the TV business, we're going to get in the content business. So they are spending a bunch of money and flooding the market with a bunch of content. Well, that could backfire, except for the fact that the content they're doing is fantastic. And
absolutely,
so as long as the quality is up there,
yeah,
the equation of quality and quantity and the amount of money they're spending is making them beyond relevant and drowning out everyone else.
But
I don't know that
Facebook...
Is that
the argument? I don't think it's an argument of quality of experience on the platform. I think it's an argument of, hey, I don't want to be where my parents are.
Yeah.
I don't want to... I mean, and I don't know if that argument can sustain itself. Like, I feel like the iteration of Facebook maybe 5 years from now, or the iteration of Instagram 3 years from now, I don't think people will have that argument. I don't want to be here because you're here, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly. And look, in 5 or 6 years, Snapchat will be, you know,
exactly,
the parents will be on Snapchat.
Exactly.
You know? So it's like, you know, who knows? Now, moving on, the national parks have turned 100 this year. We know, started by Woodrow Wilson over 100 years ago. So in celebration of this, National Parks has come out with this kind of cool new 11-minute film called Through the Ages, and it stars our very own President Obama. By our, I mean our as in our current president and ours. And this is a kind of a cool thing. It's a VR experience, 360 degrees. It's kind of goes through, talks about the national parks. Obama's, President Obama's there. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting way to use all this technology and also, you know, tell people about it, educate people about the parks.
Absolutely. I love the collaboration between National Geographic, Oculus, mm-hmm. and, you know, the government agency to be able to do something that is not only instructional, but also like promotional, because a lot of people don't know about the parks, especially people of color. Like, I would like to promote, you know, more of venturing out into doing hikes and exploring, you know, places outside of the city. And a lot of us don't necessarily have the opportunity or the mentorship to be able to take us out of, you know, the concrete jungle and into more of, you know, an environment where you don't have city lights and city noises. And so I like the fact that using the technology to promote this concept, because there's so much beauty in this country, in this state of California alone, that we could be experiencing and witnessing. And I think this is a great way for people to get a taste of that, right. Even though it is virtual reality, but just to get a taste of it. Like, yo, I didn't know that this beauty even existed, and it's only 3 hours away, or, you know, I think that's pretty cool.
Right. We gotta get out of here, but I do want to do this one last story on Uber, the Uber versus Lyft. I mean, there's a lot of Uber versus Lyft stories going out here, but this one's interesting. You know, so a lot of us, including me now, have both apps, have both Uber and Lyft, and a lot of times you wouldn't have to make a choice, and Uber is trying to do a program where they can throw an additional like $500 more on top of four drivers to be part of a program called Precious Metal. And I think the idea is that, like, if you can't beat them at the, you know, the game for the consumers, maybe you can beat them at the pool of drivers that are out there. I mean, so it's two different approaches. You could say, I'm going to get all the consumers out there who are wanting rides, but what the other piece is, there's now millions of people now who are giving rides, you know, and so if you can control all the people who are giving rides, you can kill Lyft that way. And I think that's a smart approach.
Yeah, I think it's a smart approach, but it hasn't worked as of yet, and that is the argument. It's the supply and demand, you know, conversation about, hey, well, you know, if we offer more drivers, we offer more supply, you know, then we're able to offer a cheaper price point for our consumers. So instead of paying a dollar and a quarter for a mile, now you're paying 80 cents per mile that you're in an Uber. And so what they're trying to argue is that, hey, we'll be able to dominate because we have more Uber cars on the road than Lyft cars. But from the vendor perspective, the Uber driver perspective, are they going to make more money? And so the theory is that we'll incentivize you with this program and give you additional dollars for you to become a driver. But it hasn't been proven that it's worked. There's been a lot of complaining. It's been a lot of frustration upon a part of Uber drivers that they're not making as much money because of this. And so a lot of drivers are saying they drive both because they don't have enough opportunity to make enough money just doing one. And so, yeah, it's great for Uber as a company, but is it great for the vendors that work for Uber?
Yeah,
I don't think it is. So
okay, well, I mean, we'll soon find out. There's a few more stories we get to, but we'll have to save them for next week because we have to get out of here. But I think that's it. I mean, anything else you want to mention real quick before we get out of here?
Oh, no, man. Nothing really too profound on the radar. Okay. I know we talked last week about the Get Down and
yep. Have you finished it?
Yeah, I finished it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you think?
I think it's great.
Okay.
I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it. I did go on record saying last week I think it might be the greatest Netflix show of all time, which I think was a bit much.
Okay.
But I definitely think it's good.
All right.
It was very entertaining. You just got to get past the first 40 minutes of the first episode. You got to get into the world and get adjusted to, like you said, the CG and just like the setups, because a lot of it is like, oh, this is weird. What is this? But once you get into it, then it's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. Once you get over the Baz, for good or for bad, the Baz Luhrmann effect in that pilot is definitely heavy handed in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I think once you get out of that pilot, the performances and the subject matter are fantastic. And it's still all very Baz Luhrmann. He's already set up the world and the kind of way he's telling that story. But these performances, man. Like, these actors,
they're killing it.
They're killing it, man.
Yeah, very great performances.
Yeah, so I don't know. Even your boy Jaden, like, is fantastic. You know, so
no complaints.
I really enjoyed it.
I got one for you. Yeah. Birth of a Nation, Nate Parker stuff. What is your take on all that stuff?
Oh boy, we do not have time. I got some takes on all that.
Maybe we say that for next week.
Yeah, we should say that for next week because it's very interesting. The amount of accolades and everything else he got, like, coming up, and the biggest, you know, sort of independent deal in a long time or ever, I think it is, and then now, you know all this sort of the backlash that's coming back and out about this, and it's
this,
huh?
For those that don't know what this is,
I'm sorry, Nate. Years ago, Nate was involved in a rape case for which he was acquitted, and unfortunately, the woman who was at the center of the accusations later committed suicide. Years later, but still later committed suicide, and the story is beyond horribly tragic, and the details of what happened are not exactly favorable, but it is college, and I'm not making any excuses in any way, shape, or form, but just, you know, by the letter of the law, he was acquitted. But sort of to relitigate that now, as related to his movie or what he's done as an artist, is a difficult conversation that we've had involving, you know, people like Roman Polanski, which I'm not putting Nate Parker and Roman Polanski in the same thing. I think drugging a 13-year-old girl in a hot tub is I don't know, but it's horrible. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel like you need to judge. Sometimes you need to be able to judge the art on the art, and he's hit. You know, he's trying to hit this thing head on. He's really wanting to get in front of this, and it may or may not be working to his advantage. I don't know. Just really quick, what do you think? What do you think about all this?
I mean, I agree. You know, pretty much with everything you said. Like, he was acquitted for that. You know, but you know, reading some of the finer details of what did happen, it was kind of shocking and awkward and just, you know, uncomfortable. But I think this is just a classic. I don't know if it's a issue or if it's because of the topic of his creation that he's getting a lot of this criticism, and I don't know. I don't know if I can even frame that as an argument, but it's like, why is he getting so? Is he getting? I guess what I'm saying is he getting hit hard with criticism and the support is being retracted because of the content of his intellectual property, or is it because of what happened X amount of years ago? Like that's what I'm saying. I feel like it's a conflation of both of those. I think it's a little bit of what happened, and like, I don't like the fact that you're promoting this concept in this movie, and I'm gonna try to figure out a way to make you less credible. You
know? I mean, let's face it, like, that movie being a hit movie and being talked about in this year, in this political climate, would probably not be the best thing for a large, you know, very specific political demographic of this country. And I think that you can make the argument that there are some people who very much would do anything not to have that happen.
To subvert that, yeah.
And so there's that storyline you can explore, and that being said, the movie's the movie.
The movie's the movie.
Yeah. It will hold up. It will be the movie 100 years from now. It'll be the movie 5 years from now, 5 months from now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very difficult. I would just say, be very careful here, because it's not to, like,
again, not to diminish not to, anything,
or not to diminish, you know, what, you know, all the things that happened there, not right. to diminish anything that happened there. But, you know, like, by the letter of law, he was acquitted. And frankly, I mean, every one of us, you know, have, and they mean that bad, people who are creatives in Hollywood and all these good things, all these people who've made art have a bunch of horrendous things that maybe they don't want to know people to know about or be exposed to,
right.
Or if they are exposed to and know about, still you have to judge the art separately. This is kind of part of what the game is.
Right.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I could see this criticism being appropriate or more appropriate if he actually committed, you know, a crime or was convicted of committing a crime. But because of the fact that he was not, like, why is there such a integration between him as an actor, director, writer, and his product, Birth of a Nation, and something that happened when he was in his early 20s. Like you said, the letter of the law says he didn't do it.
Yeah.
So why are we going so hard on him? You know? Yeah. Why?
Yeah. These are the questions I'm very interested in, like, exploring and asking. But when you start to explore and ask those questions, it seems like you're diverting away. It's an interesting trap.
It is. That's definitely what it is. It's like, either way you whatever way you try to frame the argument, it just feels like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like you don't know.
Well, and especially as Black folks, as African Americans, it's tricky too. I mean, it's not unlike a conversation I heard recently on Code Switch, the podcast, about how about Black journalists or journalists of colors. How do we as journalists of color cover the Trump campaign with objectivity still, when at the root of what's happening there seems to be some racist shit? How do you remain objective in these moments, and keep your journalistic integrity? And that's a tricky balance, right? And it's what's happening with Trump now, that he's got the Breitbart guy as the head of his campaign, and you hear the news being like, oh, the far right Breitbart or the conservative, like, that's a racist website. No one's allowed to say that. So it's like these weird sort of third rails, and I feel like the Nate Parker thing is here too. You can't really say what this is really about without hopscotching over the fact that something horrible did take place. So right. I don't know. It's a tricky balance. I don't know. Interesting topic. Maybe we can talk about more next week.
Yeah.
You know, we get into it as it unfolds more. But I agree. That's something very interesting. Where can the people find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And where can the folks find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell, and on Snapchat at JK Braz. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.